up there, what happened to that next group? Remember? Oh, you're cheating.
Yeah.
Okay, so those who could pull the string a little bit, what happened to some of them?
They got knocked over.
They got knocked over, right. They got the string. Remember my cross drops got knocked over? Did you remember that? That was symbolic of, that was planned. No. And so that was symbolic of the king was getting knocked over. So then the pulling the string, like, almost got it, and they couldn't it. It snapped back, okay. And what about the people who could string the bow? There are a few people who could string the bow. There was a list of people who could string the bow. About four or five people. What?
They couldn't find the target.
They couldn't find the target. Okay, there was one person who could string the bow and could find the target. Who was that? Jonah. What was his problem?
He couldn't see both, so wasn't strong enough.
So the other ones weren't skilled enough. He wasn't strong enough, so he just grazed the...
Grazed
it. He didn't knock it down. All right. Then what time of day is it? Abhijit. And what time of day is it? Noon. And so then what happens at noon? The sun is very bright. It's very hard to see. Right? So all these kings have been defeated. And there's Lakshmana waiting. What's she holding?
A tower of jewels or something?
Yeah, she's holding a golden jeweled necklace and she's all excited. Imagine how excited she is, right? Yeah, I was very excited. And then who walked up?
Krishna.
What did he do?
Easily singing the bow.
Yeah, easily. Just picks up. So these guys, they couldn't pick it up, right? And he just picked it up. And he strings it. How many times did you look at the...
One.
And he just glanced, very casually just glances at it. And how did he have to look in order to shoot the target? Simultaneously up and down. So someone asked me yesterday, how did you do that? I said, you can see everywhere at once. So he's looking up and down at once, and he just shoots, and the fish comes down. The second the fish comes down, what happens?
Jive!
Can we be there now?
Jive!
There it is. All right. And that was from the Diddy Boo, both in the sky and on the earth. There were showers of flowers. Right, beating the drum. Very nice. Thank you. Okay. And then what happened? Lakshmana became what? Telling us, she's telling the story.
She's talking about herself.
So we don't usually do that. We don't usually say, you know, I looked really amazing yesterday. We don't usually say that kind of thing. But she was so absorbed in ecstasy that that's exactly what she started doing. And how does she describe herself? What were the descriptions she gave?
Beautiful.
But what specific ones?
Tinkling
ankle bells, right? That as she's walking, her ankle bells are making noise. What else? Curling hair.
Shy smile.
What else? That her earrings were reflected on her cheeks. Right? And she looked at the other kings who lost. How did she look at them? With contempt. And then she comes, and there is Krishna. And she puts the garland. What happens the moment that she puts the garland on? The moment that she puts the garland on.
Kirtan.
Yes, so just, there were all these singers and dancers who were just poised. They're just ready. That the moment that Lakshmana put the garland on men, so there were male dancers and female dancers and all different musicians, the second that she put the garland on, immediately they all started dancing and singing, and there was a great festival. And then what happened was where we ended up yesterday?
Opposition.
It was opposite. The king fell down.
Envious.
Why?
Because
they wanted Lakshmana, right? And so what did we learn from this? We learned that in order to see Krishna, we have to change our what? Our consciousness. Because Lakshmana was seeing Krishna, and the lusty kings were seeing Krishna. And even though they had just seen Krishna defeat them, they didn't surrender. So seeing Krishna is a matter of love, not just that he's standing before you, because frankly, Krishna is standing before all of us all the time. Okay, so that's what we left off. Right? Ready? Everybody? Okay. arguing and dancing, singing's going on. The kings are envious. And we said today, we're going to find out, what are we going to find out today? About what? Anybody remember what I said at the very beginning? A bargain. Yeah. We're going to find out the most valuable thing we can possibly get is on sale. That's what we're going to do. Yesterday we learned that in order to see Krishna, we have to change our consciousness. And today we're going to learn how to buy the best thing for a very, very low price. All right, so let's go through the research. Mom. Me. Tava. At that point. Ratnam. On the chariot. Arogya. Lifting. Haya. Horses. Ratna. Gems. Tashtushpan. Having four. Sharingam. His bone named Sharingam. Udyamya. Ready. Sanadaha. Putting on his armor. Tatsuto. He stood. Ajo. On the battleground. Chatu. Four. Mujaha. Putting armor. Does Krishna need to put on armor? Why does he need to put on armor?
Body of the
gym. Body of the gym. Why does he put on armor?
Kshatriya etiquette.
Kshatriya etiquette, okay. Why does he bother with that?
He's playing the part of a human being.
Why?
Because there's something striking about a knight in shining armor.
Isn't there? We can all admit it, ladies. Don't we want to be picked up by a knight in shining armor? And rescued from all of these low-class people and put on a chariot and be carried away. Wouldn't you like that? That's why all the romance novels are so popular. Everybody wants to be carried away. Unfortunately, we get carried away by what we think is a knight in shining armor. Yes. And so we find out it's not Krishna.
Sure.
The Lord then placed me on his chariot, drawn by four most excellent horses, donning his armor and ready his bow. Sharga, he stood on the chariot. And there on the battleground, he manifested his four arms. Purport. With two of his arms, according to Guru Krishna Chakravarti, Lord Krishna embraced and cried, and with the other two, he held his bow and arrows. Now, that was amazing. You know, people are really, everybody's interested in some great romantic hero, isn't it? All the books and the movies. Isn't that what they're about? You know? Someone who does heroic feats and rescues a girl. Takes the girl away from the villains. So that's Krishna. So we don't have any interest, I hope, in hearing stories about Superman or whatever it is nowadays. I don't know if it's Batman or Superman. So we're not James Bond. So we're not interested in hearing those stories. We're interested in hearing about Krishna and how wonderful he is. And so it takes two arms to embrace his bride and two arms to hold his bow and arrow. Okay, 33. Daruka drove the Lord's gold-trimmed chariot as the king looked on, O queen. Who's your queen she's talking to? Like small animals helplessly watching a lion. Now the commentators say that it's either Krishna who's being compared to a lion or Daruka who's being compared to a lion. A Krishna's often compared to a lion. It's said that when he walks in Vrindavan, it's his domain. Of course, there's arguments about whose domain it is. You know that, right? There's often arguments about who owns Vrindavan. And in one of the pastimes, you know, Krishna and the cowherd horse come, and they say, okay, you gopis, you're carrying all your real products here, but you've got to pay tax. And they say, why do you have to pay tax? He says, because I'm Nandamarja's son, I'm the prince here. He owes Vrindavan, and you have to pay a tax for the government. You have to pay me a tax. I said, so which one of you own Vrindavan? What's your claim to owning Vrindavan? He says, well, Vrindavan is Vrinda Devi, and I'm her husband. It's a just actual. So the gopis turn to Vrinda, and they say, is he your husband? She said, I don't know this dark boy. Krishna, but he's his domain. And he walked like a lion. who's checking out his territory. Hey, you've seen a lion walk. At least we've seen him in the zoo. Everybody seen a lion in the zoo?
Yeah.
They're very slow. Right? Very deliberate. Actually, it was from the mother of that says that his gait, his way of walking, his mother of is very, very sweet. And Lord Shiva describes that the Lord has shoulders like a lion also. And of course, he has this lion-like form, this infinity.
Mm-hmm.
The king. So just like the king of animals, the lion doesn't have to argue with the little animals. He doesn't have to fight with the little animals, small animals, especially. Right? The little animals. So the little animals, the dogs and the jackals, they've got some food. And the lion can just come and without any argument take it away, making his protest. But these kings, you know, they just don't get it, do they? They just don't get it, no matter how much they see. Now, this is a materialistic mood. We find this with Ravana. Ravana had his soldiers defeated one after another after another. Even Kumbhakarna was defeated. Just imagine Kumbhakarna, who was stepping on the monkeys and eating the monkeys. Ravana rides them all day. Just one footprint. He smashed his whole temple. And he was defeated by Ramachandra. And then Indrajit, the most cherished family member, Indrajit, was killed by Lakshmana. And still, Ravana didn't get it. He didn't say, okay, now I surrender. Now I'm going to fight on. I had a reading in Brisbane about Shalva, how Prajumna and all the Yadus just finished Shalva's army. Shalva became at the head of the non-existent army. And he still, Krishna, I'm going to defeat you. Jarasandha, Rasa, his army was defeated 18 times. And every time he was left alone, his army was defeated, and he said, oh, I'm going to come back and fight again. This is a materialistic mentality. God is defeating all of us. And we're like, no, I'm not going to surrender. I'm not going to surrender. So these kings, they just see Krishna hit this impossible target. He just manifested his forearms. Okay? He's driving away like a lion. And the king pursued the Lord like a village dog chasing a lion. Some kings, raising their bow, stationed himself on the road to stop him as he passed by. Going on the road, okay, we're not going to let him go through. I mean, if he could lift and string and shoot a bow that they couldn't even lift, how are they going to stop him? These warriors were deluged by arrows shot from the Lord's bow, Shanga. Some of the kings fell on the battlefield with severed arms, legs, and necks. The rest gave up the fight and fled. At least they had enough television to get away. 36. The Lord of the Yadus then entered his capital city, Kushasthali Dwarka, which is glorified in heaven and on earth. The city was elaborately decorated with flagpoles, carrying banners that blocked the sun, and also with splendid archways. As Lord Krishna entered, he appeared like the sun god, entering his abode. The abode of the sun is in the western mountains, where he sat each evening. So here we have Krishna, he's victorious, he's defeated the king, and he's entering into his capital city, the beautiful Dwarka, built by Vishwakarma. Wouldn't that be nice? To be brought by Krishna to his capital city. My father honored his, this is text 37, my father honored his friends, family, and in-laws with priceless clothing and jewelry and with royal beds, thrones, and other furnishings. So according to Vedic society, the girls are given their inheritance at marriage.
Dowry.
That's dowry, right, which is why people didn't want so fond about, two reasons they weren't so fond about having daughters. First of all, as soon as they were old enough to be useful, and then you had to give them away in marriage. Yeah, because children are a great benediction to a family if the family lives in a natural way. In modern society, the children are considered a burden because in order to maintain a modern lifestyle, both husband and wife have to work. Okay? And in order to maintain a modern lifestyle, you have to buy your child an iPod and top designer clothing. When Modi Ashwari told me she sells dresses at $100 each. So you know, you've got to give your kids clothing worth $100 each, and the shoes have to be $200 each, and so forth and so on. So therefore, the children are a burden, and people only want to have one or two, and they kind of cramp your modern lifestyle, isn't it? You know, you can't go out and buy clothing and stuff for your kids. And that goes over to the Hare Krishna movement that we said, you know, well, I don't want to have children because they're going to cramp my service. I hope taking care of you guys was service, wasn't it? Do you consider that your parents taking care of you was service to Krishna? Do you appreciate that? And taking care of children is like a Bhakti Bhakti program. Except you're not getting people with all this baggage. You know, people come in as adults and they have all this problem and that problem. You gotta be with them. Also, they're not so malleable. And children at least are more malleable. But this is coming to the Hare Krishna movement in the name of Krishna consciousness, where, you know, we don't want children. Children are not welcome. Prabhupada, we welcome all the first day babies and our mothers and wives. So Prabhupada's mood was very, very loving and welcoming toward the children. But even from a practical point of view, because people do think that's selfishness in the schools, from a practical point of view, in a natural society, the children are a great benediction. From the time they're 4 or 5, they're helping with the family business. By the time they're 11 or 12, just when people in the West are like, oh my God, my kid's going to be a teenager. People in the natural society go, oh, my kid's going to be a teenager. They can find me really be a great use to me. They can really be helping me in my business, in my occupation, in my service. And we see the children who are raised nicely from the ages of at least, right? So 4 or 5, they're doing some service from the ages of 11 or 12. They become valuable members of these kind of communities. So anyway, as soon as the girls would become valuable, they were given away in marriage, and you had to give them your inheritance at that time. So we don't mind giving our inheritance to our children when we die, we're not going to do it anyway. So that's when you give your inheritance to a son, when you die, or when you go to the forest, that's a renunciate, and you're not going to use it anyway. But to the girls, you give it to them when they're married. So it cuts into the father's wealth. Therefore, they don't want to have, not so eager to have daughters. And they even have sons, because not only do they stay around and useful, but they bring in the wealth. When they marry the girl, they bring in the girl's inheritance. Of course, Prabhupada does say that the dowry of the daughter doesn't belong to the father, it doesn't belong to the husband, it doesn't belong to the sons. It belongs to the woman and her daughters only. So it cannot be touched by the husband or the sons. And he said the purpose of this dowry is so that if there's some difficulty, the husband dies or he becomes a useless person, that she has some personal wealth. So this system has degraded nowadays. That was the system. And the dowry was also in useful things. It was the things you could use. The Prabhupada talks about when he married his daughters that he gave them silk saris with real gold in them. And if there's a need, you burn the saris and you take the gold. Or the household utensils are made of actual metal. However, everything in the household was made of something valuable. So you could use it. It wasn't just like, you know, money put in an account that you just have to, like an insurance policy where you can't touch it unless there's a need. But you could use it on a daily basis, but if there was need, you could immediately, Prabhupada said, have that money. So that was the idea of a dowry. And if a father, fathers are naturally very affectionate to their daughter. It's the natural mood is that fathers are very, very affectionate to daughters in a normal society. So when the daughter gets married, the father naturally wants to give her her share of the inheritance. So that's what's happening here, so that there's no inconvenience. The husband's family is providing the home, and the wife's family is providing all of the household paraphernalia and a lot of the wealth. So with devotion, he presented the fixer. Yet with devotion, he presented the perfectly complete Lord with a number of maidservants bedecked with precious ornaments. Accompanying these maidservants were guards walking on foot and others riding elephants, chariots, and horses. He also gave the Lord extremely valuable weapons. So he gave gifts not only to his daughter, but also to his son-in-law. He gave gifts to the daughter as her dowry, as her inheritance, as her choice, and he also gave gifts to his son. Purport. The Supreme Lord is Purna, perfect and complete in himself. He requires nothing for his satisfaction. Knowing this, the pure devotee makes offerings to the Lord only out of love, bhakti ka, with no expectation of material profit. And on his part, the Lord happily accepts even a small gift of flowers, tulsi leaves, and water when it has been offered in love. 10:39. Thus, by renouncing, this is the last verse of the story, so we're completing the story here. And now she's actually finished telling the story, and now she's suddenly become aware of how she was telling the story. So, you know, it happens sometimes you're all excited and you're thinking, and you're like, oh, what did I say? So, in great loving ecstasy, she had been glorifying herself in so many things. So now she's open. And she's remembering she's in the presence of all of the queens. Thus, by renouncing all material association and practicing austere penances, we queens, she's speaking in general now, we queens have all become personal maidservants of the self satisfying Supreme Lord. In the opinion of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti, Srimati Lakshmana became embarrassed. Now, isn't that interesting? So she's pure devotee, she's absorbed in prema, and yet she feels emotions like embarrassment. Now, in this world, we think of embarrassment as a negative emotion, right? Something painful. So, but in the spiritual world, emotions are all blissful, and there's all variety of emotions. It's not just that there's some kind of, you know, like the impersonalist idea, and that bliss is just some sort of undifferentiated state. But actually, our material emotions, I don't have the variety that we think they do. They're really all based on fear and love. But in the spiritual world, there's a real variety of emotions. So there's embarrassment, too. In fact, even Krishna gets embarrassed sometimes when he realizes he's trying to milk a bull instead of a cow. Because he was attracted by Radharani, he was still a little embarrassed. Look at those lovely lips. Like the time of Sindhu, how Radharani was once wearing a necklace that Krishna gave her, but it was a little too big for her. And Yashoda and Jatila kind of noticed, where'd you get that necklace from? And she became very embarrassed. And so, but that embarrassment is a source of great happiness. A source of great happiness. These are the ways, and this is part of rasa. And this is the waves of various emotions that come in. There's the basic stylob, the basic relationship with Krishna. But then there's also the different waves of feelings that come in different circumstances. So Srimati Lakshmana became embarrassed when she realized that she'd been talking about her power. So she spoke this verse praising her co-wife. A nice cure for it. Right? Praising herself, praising her. In her humility, Lakshmana claimed, so although she was praising herself, she was never proud. That was just an expression of her great happiness. In her humility, Lakshmana claimed that Krishna's queen, unlike ordinary wives, could not bring their husbands under control. And thus they could relate to him only as servile housekeepers. So we find that all the queens have been saying this, right? Krishna says, I'm his wife, but I'm just his maidservant. I'm just his housekeeper. In fact, however, since the Lord's queens are direct expansions of his internal pleasure potency, Ladini Shakti, they fully control him with their love. So here we have the greatly powerful, self-sufficient Lord, who needs nothing. He's Atmaram, he's fully self-satisfied, he's Aktikama. Even if he wants something, he can fulfill his own desires. Actually, even very elevated jivas can do that. Even on the higher planets in this universe, what to speak of liberated souls. They can act as Atmarama and nothing. But certainly the Supreme Lord, you know, when he's having a little fun argument with Ruth Nini, he says, you shouldn't have married me because I don't own anything, I'm penniless. And she said, my dear Lord, you're right, you don't need to own anything because you are everything. He talked about possessing yourself. So Krishna is everything. What does he need? In fact, his devotees are part of him. Mama Nasha Jiva Loke Jiva Buddhisana. We're part of Krishna. So what can we give him? Even giving him ourselves, in one sense, he already has us. Isn't it? What can we give? What can we give? So that's the thing, personalists have this idea that there's no giving and taking. That God is just complete and we just kind of merge in Him and feel that we're one with Him and there's no reciprocation. But actually there is a reciprocation. Just see, what is Krishna giving here? What's He giving to Lakshmana and to the Father?
It's giving shelter. What else is he giving?
Opportunity to serve Krishna.
He's giving opportunity to serve himself. Mm-hmm. What else is he giving? What did he give Lakshmana? He gave her something. He embraced her, didn't he? On the chariot. So he's giving what? Himself. He's giving his very self. And he's giving himself to her father too, because now he's become her father's what?
Son-in-law.
He's giving himself. He's saying, here I am. Here I am. The son-in-law is the word to the father-in-law, although the father-in-law has to worship the son-in-law. That's part of the marriage ceremony. The father of the bride worships the son-in-law. But still, the father-in-law is the superior, right? See, he's giving himself. He's giving himself to the king, he's giving himself to the food chefs. I think of everything that we could possibly want in the world. I think of something we'd like. What would we like? You know, if someone came to me and said, okay, what would you like? What are so many things that we'd like? Yeah. Maybe we'd like a different house, maybe we'd like some money, maybe we'd like a healthier body, maybe we'd like better memory. What do you think that we want? Anybody think that they want? Yeah, no. So, but all of those things that we want, and a gazillion more, everything that's possible to want, is all included in Krishna. He's everything, right? Isn't he the source of our wealth, our remembrance, our ability? Is there anything that we could want of which Krishna is not the source? Is that possible? So suppose you get Krishna. Suppose you get Krishna. Prabhupada says in one Bhagavatam report, for some people Krishna is the direct advisor, for some people Krishna remains unknown. Wouldn't it be nice to have Krishna as your direct advisor? And Prabhupada sometimes asks, have you ever seen God? And he said, yes, I'm seeing every moment. If we had Krishna, would we want anything else? We'd have everything, wouldn't we? So he's giving himself to his devotees. He's giving himself to Lakshmana. He's fulfilling all of her desires. She gets to dress up beautifully and garland him and have the king defeated and carried around the chariot. And having defeats all the kings, and she goes into the celestial city, and they really do live happily ever after, too. Mm-hmm. And he's giving himself up. For what? What is the price? Bhatram pushpam palam vayam yomi bhakti vrayashti param bhakti padatam ashram nivarayatam. That's probably quoting that at Prabhupada Charles. I'm quoting that in his purport to text 38. If Krishna is satisfied, so just imagine in this world. So, would you satisfy your parents with a little water? I don't know about that. You know, my parents are no longer living, but if I went to them and I said, okay, I'm not going to go to university, I'm not going to do all these things you want me to do, but here's some water. They wouldn't do that. Or if a man goes to his wife and says, you know, okay, I'm not going to give you a nice house or children or ornaments or anything. Here's a glass of water. You can imagine that, you know? A woman goes to her husband, my dear Prabhu, my dear Swami, we were talking about the addresses the other day. Here's a flower. What about my meal? Flowers. She'd be happy with flowers, you know? So who's going to be satisfied like that? I mean, in this world, what happens is, do we give our heart and soul to people in this world? Have we given our heart and soul to somebody in this world? Bet you some of us have. Bet you they still weren't perfectly satisfied. Does that happen to any of us? He gave everything to somebody. You know, whether it was a project, a boss, a beloved, a child, a relative, one's country, people give their arms and legs to their country and war. Right? And is the other party fully satisfied? No, it doesn't happen. And a man works hard, goes into debt, buys his wife a new house, and she says, she's really happy for what? A week? And then again, she's on his case.
The dream's plugged up. Yeah, dear, I'll get to it in a little while. What do you mean you'll get to it in a little while? And she doesn't say, well, you're getting the house. Whenever you want to get to the dream, dear, that's okay. It's not like that. And are we ever satisfied with what people do for us? But Krishna is satisfied with the Brahman woman. He's satisfied with one tulsi leaf. I mean, Srimati Lakshmana is talking about how they perform great austerities. Tapasya. But Krishna is not interested in austerities without love. That doesn't mean anything. He's not impressed with it. So that's a pretty big bargain, isn't it? Prabhupada said, the pure devotee is holding God in the palm of his hand. Now, of course, the reason the materialists can't hold Krishna in the palm of their hand is that what will they try to do to Krishna?
Exploit
it. Don't want to use Krishna as their servant. In fact, most religious people, that's what they do. God, please give me out of my list, my shopping list, you know, of desires. Okay, God, get to it. Hurry up. I'm waiting. Now I'm waiting a long time. Look, you know, I've offered you, I can do. I wonder how many times this Vaishnava is answered. So, you know, we can have our list. And just speaking to a devotee like this, I shaved my head. I went out on the streets to distribute books. I chanted 16 rounds every day. He said, that was hard. Oh, poor guy. I went to Mangalore every day for 10 years, he said. And Krishna didn't show up. So I left. So the devotee doesn't act like that. Doesn't say, alright, Krishna, I've offered you 10,600 cents now. I've chanted your name. Let's see, let's count how many names. It's 17. 1,728 and 16. I've chanted 16 rounds for so many years. And then what about all the times I said your name in the kirtan and the books? Okay, so we're about 5 million names now. And I distributed, probably about 10,000 books. And I came to the temple about 1,000 times. Okay, where's my payoff? So we try to do business with Krishna. And one thing, you know, okay, what can I do? Some austerity. And then when the devotee is trying to kind of thing, goes for 3 days without drinking water. You know, what austerity can I do to induce Krishna to show up? Krishna's like, that's not helping us. All these things that we're doing for Krishna are supposed to be manifestations of love, and they're meant to awaken love in the beginning. So about, I think, a year ago, there was one sannyasi who was visiting a temple where I was also visiting. So I was invited to a program he was giving. And on the chair where he was sitting, the devotee at his house he was visiting had placed a flower. And he said, why are you giving flowers? He said, why are you giving flowers instead of lawnmower parts? Why flowers? First of all, there are certain forms that naturally express certain moods. So flowers tend to express a mood of love more than lawnmower parts, unless you really want to use your lawnmower. And not only that, but certain forms evoke certain moods. So when I give someone a flower, it evokes a mood of affection also. There's some relationship between the mood and the form. Although, in great love, you can give Krishna banana peels like the Dhritu, and he would eat them. So it's not an absolute connection between the mood and the form. But the form that we take, offering Krishna incense and flowers, decorating them so nicely, it's meant to invoke love. And the idea of offering things is as an expression of love. The king, although he's offering so much wealth, Krishna doesn't need that wealth. Krishna was giving away, 13,000 cows a day to the Brahmins? He didn't need any wealth. But it was an expression of love. And Krishna's reciprocating with the expression of love. And he's reciprocating so much that he gives himself. He says, here I am. I'm now your son-in-law. I'm now your husband. And it's explained here by the Acharyas that Krishna was controlled by machines. Prabhupada says that in material life, if the husband doesn't at least appear to be henpecked, then married life will not be very happy. An expert husband makes the wife think that yes, he is her most obedient servant. At the same time, actually, he keeps her under control. That's a very expert husband. We don't see too many of them. And those marriages are very, very happy. So Krishna, although actually he's the boss, because a woman doesn't want a wimpy man. No one wants a wimpy man. But although he's the boss, he's certainly not wimpy. Still, he gives each queen the impression that he's very much in love with her, very attached to her, that he would do anything for her, even going and fighting with Indra to get her a party down the tree. Right? Each queen thinks, my husband just stays home with me all the time, he never goes with the other queen. That's interesting, they don't worry about the other queen. They're not like all those poor other queens, they never get to see my husband. They're just like, he only stays with me. So Krishna's giving himself. He's making himself apparently subordinate to his devotees. How interesting that materially when we want to control God, he refuses to come under our control. And when we submit ourselves to God, he comes under our control. So this is the essence of Krishna consciousness, developing that affection for Krishna, not asking anything of Krishna. And just giving our heart. So everything we do should be done like that, with love. And then a very simple thing, given with love, we will purchase Krishna. Actually, Lord Nityananda, he's knocking on people's doors and rolling on the ground outside their house saying, purchase me, purchase me, purchase me, purchase me. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's in the mood of Radharani, who's the personification of Krishna's quality of compassion, he's going around saying, take it, take it, take prema, take prema. We're like, take it. And so this is a big bargain. You get God for just a little love. You can purchase God for a cup of water. So that you can't find a better, can you find a better bargain anywhere? Mm-hmm. Any better bargain than that? So we ready? You ready? You ready to pay the price? It's just love. Okay. Not so big thing. You get God? What more can you want? God? And so actually see that in this chapter ends. So I won't be getting class today's class, right?
Yeah.
So I'll get to be able to hear tomorrow. I'll get to be able to do some street stuff from some representative of Narayani about Krishna's channel and karma. So maybe I can develop some attachment to Krishna. These verses that end the chapter, the other queens talk about how once they have Krishna, they don't want anything else. So questions, comments, additions, attractions? Yes.
How can you understand that Krishna has so many wives, but in this material world, it's a completely, you know, taboo thing to have so many wives?
Well, what is a taboo thing in Krishna's sense? It's a taboo thing. It actually isn't a taboo thing now either. First of all, it's very common in Western society that married men have girlfriends. Isn't it? Is it common or not?
Yeah.
And there are women, and I personally do not believe in this, okay? But there are women who are perfectly willing to be the mistress of a married man. There must be, otherwise, you know. Right? They're not even the second wife. They're just the mistress. And usually it's not even public. And often they can't have any children. And they're willing to do that. Are there women willing to do this? A lot. I don't know what the statistics are, but it's pretty extreme. It's like 50% of married men have had some other women. Sometimes many. Because women tolerate. Of course, nowadays women also have to men. And then we have serial polygamy in modern society. So you don't have all the wives at one time, you have them one after another. So in a civilized society, if there was some difficulty between husband and wife, the husband could get another wife, but he still had to take care of the first wife. Not just an alimony thing. She had to actually be his wife. She was the senior wife. So if you talk to women who are ex-wives, you find it's not usually a very pleasant situation. It would be much better for the women to be the first wife than to be an ex-wife. I mean, preferable to be the only wife. But if you're not going to be the only wife, better to be the senior wife than the ex-wife. So this is why not today. People are getting married 3 or 4 times. They're just not doing it all at once. And so there's terrible suffering. Children are suffering. The whole society is suffering. Isn't this sad? They say half of all children now in Western countries will spend a good portion of their time living not with both their biological parents. So I don't think we consider it taboo. We just do it in a worse way. Modern society is doing the same thing, just in a way that doesn't have any benefit for society and only harm. So people are going to do it anyway. Just like this is pushed towards late marriage, which is pushed by the zero population growth people, because they figure if women delay their, that when they have their first child, you decrease the population in general. So there's late marriage, but what's happening? Kids who are 13, 14 are having relationships, aren't they? Wouldn't it be better if they got married? So it's not like everybody's staying celibate till they're 35, right? That was going on in the world. I don't think so. And even in India, this is coming in. I read on the Jet Airways magazine that 30% of Indian teenagers in Indian cities are openly having illicit sex. 20 years ago, they were doing it, but they were doing it quietly. Now they're doing it openly. So people are having so many. I don't know what the percentage of people is who marry young, stay with one person their whole life and never cheat on them, but it's not that big. So, you know, it's not like these things are taboo in modern society at all. We're backwards. Don't have polygamy, but have unmarried girlfriends, and have mistresses when you're married, and divorce when you're married. I mean, that's crazy. And just says understanding the mode of ignorance. You think religion is irreligion, and irreligion is religion. You have it backwards. Now you don't even marry them. But formerly, especially men who were very, very wealthy, like the king, they would have many women. And that's their mood, actually. That's part of what's enlightened them. And you have to remember that those kings, they would have to be on the front line in the battlefield. It wasn't a small thing. And they knew they were taking 1/6 of not only the pious, but also the simple activities of their citizens. So they were taking a huge responsibility and a huge risk. So who's going to do that without some purse? You know, only a self-realized person who's doing it through Christian service is going to do that without any kind of benefit. So am I not going to be the first one on the battlefield? Okay, you could have many women. But you have to take care of them. And frankly, the women were happy to be the wives of the king. And again, you see that in modern society. You know, there are many women who are very happy to be the 10,000th girlfriend of some basketball star. I'm saying, is this true or not? There's some rock star. You know, he tells a woman, you're my woman number 5,724. And she's like, cool. You know, she's in there. Because he's a big guy. She'd rather be 5,724 or 5,724, some big guy, than, you know, number one is a woman. And these people don't even marry them. Modern society isn't even married. These sports heroes, these movie stars, these rock stars, they don't marry the women, they just exploit them. So women are willing to be exploited. Where was I? Once been in an airport, and they were playing some music as I walked by the shop. Yeah, it was an airport. You know, I'm only going to promise you tonight, not tomorrow. Whoa. So people in Tara agree with that. They're agreeing. So why wouldn't a woman agree to be wife number 120 of the king? She was a wife, she was queen. Her children became princes and princesses. She lived in the palace. She had a lot of them. Does that make sense? People already have this mentality, which is now it's being done sinfully. And for Krishna, would you like it if Krishna had only one wife or one gopi and he couldn't be one too? Sorry, wrong for you. All positions taken. You know, you go to apply for a job, say, sorry, position filled. Krishna said, I got my one power boyfriend, I got my one gopi girlfriend, I got my one wife, my one mother, that's it. Sorry for you. Go like that. You get to be married too. Krishna has gazillions of cowherd boyfriends, and each one of them thinks, so that's what Swami explains, I'm Krishna's favorite. Like, I can't look at all of you at once, right? I'm looking at this devotee over there, I can't be looking at you. Like, how did Krishna look up and down at the same time? So you can't do it. But Krishna can do it. If Krishna's sitting here, each one of you would be thinking, Krishna's only talking to me. If we think that way, we read the books, we're like, wow, he's talking right to me. So Krishna's looking at each one of us. And one of the reasons that Krishna has so many wives in the future world is to show that. That was explained to when he won the hand of Satya, how he expanded himself for the seven bulls. He says, don't worry, no matter how many devotees I have, I can always be here for you. It's not that this facility is just given to Lakshmi. If we want it, if we want to marry Krishna, we want Krishna to be embracing us and holding his bow and defeating all the princes and carrying us into dwarf, and we'll do it for us too. Don't say sorry, that was Lakshmi's thing. So therefore Krishna displays these pastimes in this world to entice us. Come on, come on. There's room for you in the dance too. Confirmed. Krishna became the child. Not only did Krishna become the child of the older gopis and gopas, who else did Krishna become the child of in Vrindavan, in the Brahmi Rohan Lila? Besides all the elderly gopis and gopas. The cows. Krishna became the child of the cows. Each cow had Krishna as your cow. It's Krishna. Can you imagine that? Mm-hmm. It's a liquor thing. Krishna drinking milk, drinking him all over. So he even becomes a child of each of the cows. Kavi Kanapur describes it as Krishna walks around Vrindavan. He makes sure that every day he steps on each clump of grass, that he touches each flower. What a nice master. Is that alright? Long answer. I hope that was okay. Somebody else? Yes.
Sunamandhi, as you said, that nobody can be better about than Krishna. The other day, I was giving a lecture in Bhagavad Gita here, and one devotee, not devotee, just the outside, non devotee. Can you describe the spiritual world? So may I ask you how to describe the spiritual world for teaching purposes?
You don't know. You just want an excuse to talk about the spiritual world.
Yes.
Oh. So everything is made of Chintamani. Everything is conscious. Chintamani is conscious. Everything is a person. Everything is an individual. There's no thing, really. There's no thing. Everything is a person with free will, with individuality. All of the palaces, all of the water, everything is alive. And everything is alive with love and with service.
And there, Bhagavad Gita Purusha, there's only two rules there. Love Krishna and don't envy. So there's no police force. They don't need a GDC law book that gets thicker every year. They don't need laws. There's some semblance of law in morality for fun. So it appears that the gopis are married to someone else and they have to sneak out. But that's just for kriya, just for play, just for lila, for sport. But actually there's no law. And everyone is completely liberated. Liberated means? What do you mean by liberated?
No further bodies.
No further bodies? But then only liberated. We say, oh, they've been liberated. You mean they're now?
Free.
Free. Everyone there is free. Everyone is free. All living entities are completely free. They can go anywhere they want in the spiritual world, anywhere they want in the material world. They can take any form they desire. Like the demigods, people need to do that. Let's speak of the residents of the spiritual world. And many times they have different forms and different pastimes. Some of them are, they have, you know, male form with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's also in the spiritual world, a female form with Krishna. They can be engaged in many different relationships at once. They can expand themselves, not as much as Krishna. But they can, the liberated soul can expand themselves. Wouldn't you like to be in many places at once? Sitting here in another form is taking prasadam, another form is swimming in the ocean. I used to want to do that at school. I said, if only I had one form here, so I could pass the test and another form room that I want. So I don't get in many forms. Whatever one's desire immediately there, the desire tree, the desire house, they fulfill all of one's desires instantly. There's no lack. And there's no hard work. People are working, but it's all play. So they're busy in activity, they're not bored. There's no necessity of work. And there's no, although there's sequences of activities, there's no degradation of time. There's no wearing away of anything. So it's always an eternal now, although there's sequences of events. And everyone is very beautiful. Nobody has difficulties with age or degradation. Everything is eternal. You know, your home is really your home. You don't have to worry that there'll be an earthquake or there'll be a war or the government will take your home to put up a hotel or something like that, or that it'll, you know, disintegrate. Like, this is an old building that sure requires a lot of maintenance and upkeep. So there, you know, there's not a question like that. Everything is aligned. Everything is eternal. And people are, they're so connected with each other, they immediately, they understand each other. They have no heartfelt connections. There's not a barrier of egoism or a barrier of lust between people. Everybody can just be on the platform again of freedom and openness and loving communication. And people are related to each other through just free loving giving. So this is how we relate to each other as need. I have some need for friendship, I have some need for this, I have some need for that. So I make relationships hoping that I'll meet my needs. And I'm calculating, I'll give you something to meet your needs if you'll give me something to meet my needs. And I try that as either equal or in my favor. Right? And of course the other part is trying to do the same thing. So all of our relationships in this world are based on a sense of lack and illusion. But it's based on the illusion of lack. And it's based on this concept of exploitation. Whereas there, everybody's completely full. Everybody's also up and running, up and coming. Nobody needs anything. So they're giving to each other on the platform of complete freedom and the platform of just love. They don't need anything in exchange, but they have everything. And they're giving just out of giving, without any kind of calculation of getting anything back. And their speech is so beautiful that their speech is like music. What you speak of, the music. And we can only imagine if their speech is like singing, what is the singing like? And it's just reading how, although there's only 7 notes on the scale, and last week some of the gopis were singing 8 notes. And their walking is so graceful that their very walking looks like dancing. Just imagine dancing. And everything's full of, everything is. It's beautiful and harmonious. So that even the bees buzzing have such a beautiful singing sound that the sweetly singing birds stop their own singing, because it's not empty. And the sweetly singing birds stop their own singing and they're just absorbed how the bees are chanting. And the flowers that are full of various colors and variety of fragrance, They're bowing to Tulsi. Again, because there's no enemy. And people have their family and their community. Everyone has their eternal mother and father, their sisters and brothers, and their various, but they're all eternal. That everything centered around Krishna's pleasure. And yet Krishna is fully giving to the devotees. The devotees are fully giving to Krishna, and Krishna is fully giving to the devotees. And Krishna, we said, he gives you some. Especially Goloka Vrindavan. The devotees actually feel, most of them feel equal or superior to Krishna. He's just playing with them as one of them. He's not showing off, you know, oh, I'm so much better than you.
Mm-hmm.
Even he loses the games and he has to carry them on his shoulders and so many things like that. And everything is always expanding, expanding in variety, expanding in quality, expanding in every way. It's not static. It's very, very dynamic. Every beauty is always expanding. How can we even conceive of them? People who are unlimitedly beautiful and their beauty is always increasing, how is that possible? So there's Radha and Krishna looking at each other with beauty. Their happiness is increasing. So there's no limit. So, and one can experience, actually, that spiritual world is taking place at this moment within our heart. We're just not seeing taking place right now on the altar. It is a place, but it actually can't be understood with material time and space. Even the other parts of this universe, time and space, as we know them on our planet, makes no sense. So really, wherever Krishna is, his world is there, and Krishna is everywhere. That means his world is everywhere. And we've just chosen to put ourselves into a state of stupor where we're not aware of it. Is that alright? Anyway, the nice descriptions of Prabhupada Gita in the Bhagavatam, the chapter description of the Kingdom of God, and of course throughout the 10th canto descriptions of Vrindavan, and many of the books of the Goswamis also describe Vrindavan. So these two of you are falling asleep.
No prajapas.
What?
No prajapa, everybody in this group.
Oh, no, that actually isn't true. That actually isn't true. In Goloka Vrindavan, they only talk about Vrindavan. They only talk village talk.
And everybody in this world.
Because their village talk is all about Krishna. Like, you know, our village talk in this world is, oh, you know what sounds like? Oh, yeah, this person is dead. You know, and there's like global village talk. What movie star did this? What college did this? But the other saying, you know, hey, you know what Krishna did? He built a forest fire. And he told us to close our eyes. And all of a sudden, we were back in my Nirvana. Amazing. I wonder who he is, I wonder who we are, wow. He killed that Ramasura. You know, hey, what's Mother Rohini making for Krishna today? Did you see what Radharani was wearing? Isn't that amazing? That was really pretty. What do you think Krishna's going to be there? I don't know if that Krishna really likes you. Look, Radharani, see how expertly he drew those designs on your face? They're not even quivering. He doesn't, you know. Well, Krishna, you don't really love her, otherwise his hand would have been shaking as she's doing that. Just like ordinary people, they talk about who's in love with who and who's marrying what. That's what the gopis talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what did Krishna do with you? What did he say? Oh, what did he say? You know, like little girls in the high school. Oh, do you love Jimmy? Really? What did he say? Did he look at you? Did he do anything? What happened? And Krishna's friends like Madhavendal also talk, and some of Krishna's Priyanama Shakti, they also talk to Krishna like that. Where do you think the gopis were? Hey, this is your day, we're going to get back to them. Why don't we go at this point, and then we can stop them on that? That's what they're talking about. And of course, they also have entertainment. Men who are in their ages for entertainment in the evening for Krishna, and the entertainment they show, the pastimes of Guru Ramachandra. Show Krishna, you know, the pastimes of Lord Varaha, love your stories, her bedtime stories are like that. Let me tell you the story of what he's singing. Krishna does how you describe it, and Krishna's going out to the forest. Mani Soda says to Krishna, now Krishna, if you see any wild animals, just remember where Narayana. He'll take care of you. And Krishna smiles. Rupa's not the most smiling. who says, may Krishna smile, protect us. He's trying to conceal his smiling. But she's saying, may we're trying to protect each other. And then she puts on the same coverture on his wrist. She says, no, I'll make sure you're okay. Here's the same coverture on Krishna's wrist. And she says to Balaram, you have to take care of this. Are there any demons in the forest? It's a simple village. All they're talking about is God. But what's their gossip about? What's Rai Rai doing? What's Krishna doing? What's Yashoda doing? What's Rohini cooking? What entertainment is Nanda Maharshal saying for today? The only rules are love and don't envy. No, they don't have to worry about eating too much. Nanda Mangal is the cowboy boys are teasing him. They say you're offering everything to the sacrificial fire in your belly. Mother-in-law eating so much, there's no regulation. You're not controlling your senses. No, probably there's no sannyasis there. No austerity.
No brahmacharis.
No brahmacharis. Nothing much. But there's no renunciation here. Everyone is absorbed in Krishna's pleasure. It's like a simple village. When Gopa Kumar first went there, he said, am I in earth or am I in the spiritual world? No. Alright? We could talk a long time about this country, shouldn't we? We'll fall asleep and have breakfast.
Thank you.
We'll save some for another time. So then tomorrow I'm going to be giving the morning class. Tomorrow I'm going to ask me to give two seminars specifically for parents. But the first one in the morning, the first one is going to be how to transmit culture to others. And although certainly it's applicable for parents who want to transmit culture to their children, it's also applicable for anybody who's preaching and would like to transmit the culture of Krishna consciousness to people coming into the movement. So that's really a general one about how do we transmit culture and values. I think it starts at 10. And then there'll be one in the afternoon, specifically for parents, sadhana for parenting. So that'll be on how you yourself have good sadhana as a parent and how to involve your children in your sadhana. So that, I think we're going to do that from 2:30 to 4 tomorrow. So I'll be giving you one request. All right? So thank you very much. And we can all meditate on this nice pastime of Krishna. Right, riding past the kings and raising up with two arms, holding his bow and arrow with the other two arms. Entering into Dwarka like the sun setting in the mountains. Lakshmi's father giving her his daughter and son-in-law all his opulence. And Krishna giving himself to his glory. So thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Melbourne Vaishnava. Ki.